This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. If you take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper down the rabbit hole, and I'm here with my most excellent and deviant, or not deviant, co-host. I am Andrea Vitamus. I'm here with my co-host, Zach Louis, or Zachary Louis. I don't know what you want to go by today. What do you want to go by today, Zach? Zach. Changed your name to Zachary. And I'm here with my most excellent partner in crime, Jason Caldwell. Although we're not committing any crimes.
Not yet, anyway.
Very nice. So we're going to talk about Invocation today. And, you know, we have a lot to say about Invocation and probably going to get hate mail, just like we did when we talked about the aristocratic magic and got hate mail for that. Would you like to take a bow, Jason?
Did I rip into him 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, he pretty much did. So Invocation is this convoluted topic that a lot of people will be like, I'm not invoking anything. And other people will be like, oh, I'm invoking everything. We kind of have a lot of experience from both a ceremonial magic perspective, and I feel like Zach has a lot of experience from a Taoist perspective and from a Buddhist perspective, and Jason has ceremonial magic. We all have ceremonial magic perspective. And a lot of these systems don't have compatible views of invocation. In fact, the language itself is a problem of invocation. If you read ancient grimoires, if you go to Hindu texts, if you go to voodoo, seance, even Norse magic, everyone does not mean the same thing on invocation. But I think there's a few general areas of study that kind of really lead into this similar type of thing, which is mediumship, invocation. We can't talk about invocation without evocation, which is part of the problem of language that we're going to get into real fast, and definitions. So I'll turn that over to Jason.
Okay. Invocation, taking it into yourself. Evocation, putting it out there external from yourself. However, if you're reading the Lesser Key of Solomon, it's listed as invocations, even though it's telling you to cast it into a triangle. So this is where sometimes language from different points in history is not always...
Yeah, but that's in the Greater Key of Solomon. The Lesser Key of Solomon tells you to evoke into the triangle.
No, that's what I was saying. Lesser Key of Solomon, the Goetia. It's called invocation, but you're evoking by modern language.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it. Like, you'll hear demonologists too all the time talk about invocation of the spirits because they feel like evocation is a negative word based on controlling the spirit. Yeah, about that. There's still a definition problem of in and e. Literally in Latin basically means in and out. I mean, you know. And it doesn't make sense to have... Yes, there is cultural baggage with the term evocation, which we could talk about forever, because you're controlling the spirit, binding it in a triangle. But that never works out anyway when you summon the spirits that way in that capacity. They just burn you if you're not... I mean, just like a person, like if you lock a person in a jail, they're going to burn you. But invocation is a little bit more intimate, in my opinion. You know, being initiated voodoo priests, we let the spirits come possess us. And the thing is and even in Hinduism, people who are talented enough to interact with spirits will allow the spirits to actually possess them. That's a real thing. You wouldn't see that in the West versions of Hinduism, but you talk to a Shiva priest or anyone else over there in India, actually have the opportunity, they'll tell you, girls will get possessed.
That's kind of their job title, to get possessed consistently, actually.
Well, I don't know about that, right? We could talk about that's a whole show right there. That statement is a whole show. Right there, Zach, that could be a whole show. I think invocation is one of those things that I think particularly people poo-pooed it for a long time. You know, even myself.
Okay. And would that poo-pooing have anything to do with the Catholic Church and all the fear and dread of being possessed?
No, the opposite, actually.
What do you mean by the opposite?
Why let a spirit into your frame to have any control over your life whatsoever if you're rebelling against Catholicism?
Okay, so you're looking at it more from the screw you, I don't want you in my sphere at all.
Well, that's, I mean, if you look at it, a lot of left-hand path philosophies will start there. I mean, I started there, you know.
Sure.
Oh, no spirits in my frame whatsoever. Militantly, even when you first met me, I was still just coming out of that. Like, basically, I was pretty much 100% my own magical skills, sorcery, and servitors. No external spirits whatsoever. Now, unfortunately for me, you know, I actually got a spiritual teacher, like a family member who would send spirits above me, so it was kind of hard to keep ignoring that, but that's okay. I did a good job for a lot of years. Because I'm very stubborn. I'm pretty good at this. So I came from that position of, like, invocation is bad because it messes with your head. You know, basically that's what it is. In your head. Which people will assume that I'm saying because it's in your head, it's in your head and it doesn't exist externally. Those definitions, when you start doing hardcore magic, I feel like that all falls apart too. What's in and out of your head? Really? When we did a show on the magic of fiction with Stephanie, what's in or out of your head is a lot more fluid than I think most people would like to accept.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, at that point, it gets really deeper down the rabbit hole when you gotta start thinking about it.
The puns are flying this show already. Not even from Jason, it's you tonight, man. You're the pun master. We're like, man, we're beat up from our work week. We're tired. You're like,
I just got back from work. I'm tired. The puns are flying.
Puns are flying. I actually think that the puns flying is pretty fun. Punny. That was just a bad one. But I mean, seriously, like, we have a normal narrative story. To do an invocation means we have to break that story. From an energy point of view, it means it's a radical shift in energy to potentially alien energies. You know, so when people first do invocations, it usually, honestly speaking, goes too well or too bad. It goes very badly if you actually do it. Now, most people, I feel like, because of the, I don't know, maybe they're spending too much time cursing the moon and the fairies, you know, on Instagram, that they don't ever move past to what a real invocation is. You know, an invocation is a state. From your point of view, I really believe it's a state. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist outside of your being. It's an information state that's complex, and it affects your body and mind in a complex way that's alien. You're essentially like pulling an alien vibration into your system, for better or worse. I mean, the good sides of that is you can have transformation. The bad side is that is you could have transformation. Like,
yeah, and I think, I mean, I've heard you describe it as a gear, right? Where it's like, well, if that's in you, that's always going to influence you from that point forward unless you break the gear.
You can't break it. Just like the Zen koan, when I throw a rock in a pond, It is part of you. You can limit what the waves actually do, but it's still, you have an experience. It's part of it. If you've done an invocation successfully, how do you take it back? You could try to forget about it, but it's still in your subconscious mind. It's still there, theoretically buried in your energy system somewhere, right? It can still be pulled forward if you're exposed to the spirit that you invoked again at a later time. You're still going to be more resonant with that spirit, even if you had a negative experience. Or actually, sometimes if you have a negative experience, you could be more resonant with the spirit, because fear, depending on what it is, even though people think they're afraid of something, they're reacting badly, that's still sort of in resonance, right? The greater the reaction, the greater the resonance, whether it's good or a bad reaction in your body.
Well, along those lines, didn't you have a guy years ago that did like this deep, deep invocation of Tiamat, and it came down to every time he even heard the word Tiamat, he'd just go possessed?
I've had a couple. I've met a few people who have had that happen, which that gets an interesting part. So, I mean, first, there's certain systems have certain training methods that limit that. Right, ceremonial magic really has a whole bunch of systems that really is about increasing levels of control. And I know I'll get hate mail for saying this, but your triangle and circle are a myth. It's a sleight of mind just there to produce, like, again, you can use herbs and the salt and stuff to kind of add and hold the energy and intention, but it's still just you doing the summoning. Like, so this idea that it's a perfect containment is an utter perfect lie. But as you go further in ceremonial magic, you realize that too. But that doesn't mean that the methods aren't really good to learn control. And this is actually one of the things I had to work through, was this level of control. Because when you start in ceremonial magic, which everyone starts in ceremonial magic, but now they don't, but we did, right? When we were starting, that's all there was. You're learning systems of control, mental and body control and mind control, which basically gives you degrees of almost compartmentalization. So that way you will never actually lose control in a ritual. You know, took me a little time before I would even think about going to Haiti. You know, I love the spirits, right? And I can get possessed. It's a willing choice. Which they'll tell you in Haiti is never possible. It's never willing. But we know that's a lie, because the methods of training were different to start with. Like for ceremonial magic, it is going to be a choice that you have to choose to relinquish that control that we built up internally and say, I'm going to allow this to happen. And then, yes, you've all seen real possessions actually occur where, like, I should have died. And that's the thing. There's a spectrum here of invocation. There's, you know, where you have a spirit, you're talking to a spirit back and forth. Maybe that's the evocation level spectrum. You know, you have a chat, right? That can dive into conversations where you get past the surface thoughts of your own surface thoughts. And maybe there's information being passed back and forth that is not exactly verbal either. You know, then it could go further where it's starting to come into your body, I feel like. And there's different layers of that too, where some people will feel passe in voodoo, they call it, like, where they feel a touch of the spirit or wind or something like that, or they might get sick to their stomach, might start getting a headache, minor stuff where the spirit is not quite in you, but your body's starting to react. Some people, if it's a spirit they know really well, they'll have elation. I mean, I think I get that when Dabala's coming and I'm not possessed, I'll start diving down into this kind of elation because Dabala's there. Dabala's a serpent, primal serpent, who creates lots of stuff. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, when we're doing a goon work, you'll get happy, you know, and you'll feel it where your body's starting to react.
Right. It's a cultural difference, though, too, because here in the West, we're taught that having other things come in and take over your psyche is really, really bad from the Christian perspective, right? But in Haiti, what if you were raised from the time you were a baby to believe that the spirits could come at any time and take possession of you and it's okay, you know?
you wouldn't have any control, which they don't. If you actually go down, that's actually a myth too. You develop control over time. That's the one of the secrets. When you go down there, people are actually learning to actually, as they become a Hukan or Mambo, to get control. So they're not getting possessed 24/7. Oftentimes when people aren't on that path, they can possess a lot more because they don't have control over that, you know?
Right. And I think that's an important cultural thing that Jason even brought up as a topic piece. It's like, okay, even from a perspective of in Western ceremonial magic, which is Western culture, you have a dichotomy between mind and body. So you're going to want more control over that. Where in Haiti, it's a little bit different, even though it's still Western influenced. You know, they would view that as a gift. So just the interaction of that's very different.
I think Western influence is, from a spiritual view, maybe not. You know, yeah, sure, they put the saint pictures over those Lua so they don't get killed. But that isn't the same as having a hard influence. Actually, probably Kabbalistic thought has more influence.
Right.
And actually, most Voodooists will say, like, Jesus is basically a big brother. He's a big Lua. They'll say something like that. I've heard that.
Right.
And if you think about it, like, you know, if Jesus is a spirit, you could actually pull him down and get invoke him, right? Not that I've never done that before, right?
Oh boy, didn't you do like Easter or crucifixion Jesus one time?
No. That'd be insane. No. Why? Because I like pain? Do you like pain that much, Jason?
I never told you about the series of nightmares, did I? Never mind. We'll save that some other time.
Damn. I don't even want to know. That's just uncomfortable to even hear that.
Let's just say, have you ever dreamt of having a 10-inch spike put through your fucking wrist? Anyway.
No. That's why I don't. Jesus, the crucifixion Jesus, Jason. Maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe that was a bad idea. But actually, that leads into an actual insightful point. Like, you just kind of said one of the things that kind of people don't actually, when we say transformation could be good or bad, like, you think the ritual ends after an invocation? Actually, do you think the ritual really ends after an evocation? You still threw the rock in the pond. I mean, and this 9-inch or 10-inch spike through your wrist is kind of a good example. You think that can't come out in dreams, since your invocation of spirit or energy that you pulled into your system can't affect your dreams and change them and have the spirit actually start coming on, coming to you more often, even outside of the ritual? I mean, this sort of says what the bad side is, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the bad side, I mean, even from that perspective, is like, if you're doing it enough times that it's influencing you like a ripple, what's it going to mean for the rest of your life?
Well, I mean, this is good and bad. You know? Right. Like, I mean, isn't that the point? If you're trying to transform something, that you want it to be a ripple to transform things? I mean, that's the good and bad point. I mean, people do invocations. Well, first, most people do the invocations, what level do they get to? Probably the wishful thinking part, right? They don't even get to the level of meditation necessary to actually affect their energy system.
Yeah.
But once you've rung that bell with the spirit in an actual way, what happens? Like, well, yeah, of course it can reach out to you. Like, you've rung the bell. You've kind of changed things. Man, Zoom's resting up today. It's like an evil spirit over Zoom. But anyway, with the bell, you're still, part of you is still resonant with that. And if you had a good experience, that's also true. But that's what I said. Even a nightmarish experience, you're still resonant with it. It's now part of, relegated to your shadow self and the stuff you want to admit never happened. And there it is, right? But it's still part of you. I mean, that's where people get into the TMAP thing that you were describing, Jason, and where they don't have any control at all. All right, you even mentioned the name, and it's this shadow thing which is seeping control over them. They could get control over that, but that would be hard work. And I think a lot of people, when they do, this sort of stuff, they do the invocation, and if it goes badly, they think, "Oh, I'm never going to do that again," not realizing that could create all kinds of problems. Or when they do invocations of certain types of spirits like demons and sit in the chair at certain people's houses, you know, in certain places, and basically get the invocation done over the top of them, right?
You know, because what could possibly go wrong if you don't have, and if you're just a complete newbie that has no training and somebody else is saying, "Just trust me, relax, sit back, let it happen."
Exactly. Well, this is what we're getting at, right? Like, and by the way, that actually happened. We won't name names. We didn't do that. But it actually happened. And what happens is the person actually, once they might not understand what's going on, and usually you don't unless you're really good at meditation, which we've been talking about a whole bunch. And, you know, I think we got into multiple fights with our Reiki students to say, like, "Hey, you need to actually meditate." And they're like, "Well, why? This is pointless." And we're like, "No, you need to be able to dissect if things are going wrong. You do an invocation and you're starting to be, a jerk to your boss. That is not going to be productive for your general survivability. Or if you become a jerk to your girlfriend or a boyfriend, again, that's not going to help the relationship. Now, in some cases, what you're asking for requires the spirit to do that and influencing you that way. I mean, that's the thing. That's actually the thing. Like, sometimes we're asking for stuff and this is going to go on and it's going to actually negatively affect things on the surface too, because you literally asked for it to a result that requires you to make changes that no one's willing to make. Again, invocation leads to transformation. On the surface, that could be bad, but in the long run, it might be necessary. But it's still an alien intelligence. Like, depending on how alien the invocation is, like, it may not even understand the human world at all, right? Again, do they really understand the human world? See, now I would argue spirits generally don't. They understand the human world because we provide an interface for them through our minds to actually interact with this world in a way that they can understand, except for the dead. That's a different thing. But you shouldn't be invoking the dead either way, unless you're really good at this.
Yeah, I mean, that gets into a lot of different things, like, you know, not particularly with the dead, but could be related to the dead. It's like just using tools at that point to benefit your invocations, right? And various things around that could be ritual tools or ornaments.
Anything that assists the sensory vibrations, the sensory information things will help the ritual, including tools. But tools, usually you can use another way, as basically batteries. Most of the ceremonial magic, because they don't necessarily, this is actually what I think, and some people will vehemently disagree with me. I think ceremonial magic relies on tools so much because it didn't have a good concept of the body energy system, and because it's not there. And if you listen to classic ceremonial magicians, they will literally say there's no such thing as energy in ceremonial magic. That doesn't actually fit the book, because psychics can tell something's going on when the actual ceremonial operation's going on. People who are not trained in ceremonial magic can tell something's going on. So it's kind of hard to say there isn't some X factor that's going on that, you know, people perceive.
That's definitely an interesting point when you're saying, like, they didn't have a understanding, or they didn't map out the energy system, because, like, when it comes to Eastern practices, you definitely see that, where they don't actually, some specific sects don't even want tools, and they just want to use your body as the tool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thing is, if in most of the grimoires, what you're doing is spending enormous amounts of time and enormous amounts of resources to get some of these materials that have a certain vibration. The idea there is that that acts as a battery. I actually think that acts the best way to, in modern terms, not from the grimoires, to look at that is those act as batteries that can actually help the basic process go much further. But that's not consistent across all ceremonial magic books either, I think, because if you go to Barden, what's he doing?
Well, he's actually using herbs and washes, actually, when you look at those steps initially.
Yeah, initially, but not later.
Correct.
Well, and it comes down to, okay, the Chinese would say qi follows yi, energy follows will. When you go into the old grimoires, they're using their willpower and their mental fortitude to build up these tools, as you speak of. Now you fast forward to the Golden Dawn. The Golden Dawn stealing techniques. I'm going to get the hate mail. Jason614@gmail.com. Leave Andre alone. The Golden Dawn. Hang on. Okay, do I got the mic? The Golden Dawn is stealing techniques that they got from Eastern philosophy, and they're transitioning it into the Western, and that's why you got the whole, you know, energetic, a lot more energetic stuff going on with the Lesser Banishing ritual and all kinds of different rituals from there.
Oh, no. I mean, I totally agree on this because, like, I even looked at a post this weekend and I was like, do I comment on this? Again, if you're going to send hate mail, send it to me, Zach@ZacharyLouis.ca. But I was even just saying, like, Thelema and Crowley punked a lot of shit when he started to look at Yi Jing. I'm like, these are not correspondences directly to each other. They are not even equivalent to each other. He's just trying to put it in a Western Kabbalah context without understanding it, because it fits.
I mean, functionally speaking, like, the discussion of energy and invocation and whether or not these tools work, there's clearly some rituals that cannot be accomplished without building the batteries. Wait, can I get my sunglasses? You know, I packed them already. But anyway, there's some sunglasses. There's not some sunglasses. There's some rituals that I think require so much energy, if we're in a classic energy such an information resonance, that's probably better, that the batteries and the links actually are necessary. Now, I think that's far fewer than what is listed in the books or what some people will claim. I think, like, you could summon the Goetic spirits with nothing right now. You could summon the angels with nothing right now. They'll come. If you can hold the vibration, right? So the invocation there is, can you take the mental state on, which we're, it's like, can you take this alien mental state on? Like, well, after you practice more, I think anyone could take on almost any mental state. You know, some things like have living traditions, so they're a little harder, but it's still possible. You just can't say some things about what you're doing in public. It doesn't mean it's not happening. Like, it certainly is. But in some cases, people actually will get the wrong vibration because you don't know what it should be, right? That happens a lot too. But then you have a name, which is like an anchor attached to the wrong thing. And some people will get in trouble with that sort of thing too. And because they've, like, started to invoke it. But I mean, the process though is still the same. Like, you're starting to, I don't know. Like, it isn't like, unless, okay. Here's the other thing nobody wants to talk about. Spirits knock a lot of times before you ever are doing invocation.
Yep.
Like, people think they're the ones initiating. I'm going to just go and do this initiate. I'm going to go invoke the spirit. Like, it just came out of the blue. Like, I'm
gonna do some research on this because it's convenient right now.
Yeah, I'm going to do some research on this. You know, like, just randomly, I'm going to go research this one spirit. And people assume that's coming from their heads, but how do spirits actually interact? Well, if we're talking about invocation and a spirit's knocking, they might not knock in a, they might skip the first stage of wishful thinking and just kind of interact with your subconscious mind to get the message to go look up details. I mean, it isn't like it's one way. Like, these things, even when you start having the thought, it could be that that spirit is trying, some part of you is resonating with it, and it's trying to build that resonance. And the same thing Jung would say, like, when a new thing comes into your frame, like, some people just have radically, like, nightmarish things so they can figure out what it is. Why? Because your subconscious mind interprets any alien energy as alien, literally alien and horrible and monstrous, and your subconscious mind freaks out when something's trying to actually make its presence known. But oftentimes, if you've done enough ritual work, I feel like you get past that phase, your subconscious mind is not freaking out as much. But still, it's like the spirit will knock before you even start doing any work, you know? You'll just find the right information that you need at the right times to just happen to do the invocation. I can't even say how many times that happens. And people think, oh yeah, that's just me.
No.
Just... spirits actually work in some nonlinear way or not? Like, if, because you can't have it both ways. It can't be all you unless you don't believe the spirits are anything other than metaphors, which is okay. We could discuss that, in which case, or they're already knocking.
Right. And then the knocking, again, it's not in a direct timeline. So it's kind of like what you think is one thing can be a complete exponential jump to another thing. That's what I've noticed, where I'd be like, I'm looking at one thing and somehow with the Google Mancy that happens, I end up down a wormhole where I'm like, where the hell did this go?
Well, that might be my fault, dude. You're on a technomantically enhanced computer that I built.
Oh, absolutely. It works awesome for that.
It's probably my fault.
I wouldn't say it's your fault. That happens with both computers, just Google Mancy.
Oh, there you go.
So our sponsor is asking a question, so let's look at what it is. So it's like, if you don't meditate, how can you even begin to identify these random ideas are even yours?
You can't. And in fact, that Tiamat story that Jason outlined is exactly an instance where if you don't meditate and you don't understand what's going on, you don't understand. You can't have an understanding of your own energy system to understand you're losing control. Was that Tiamat thing my fault, Jason?
No. Oh, it do I have the mic? It was not your fault, because they came to you, they asked for it, they paid for it. You were just the tool of their own hand.
The tool.
I remember.
Damn, dude. Nice poetic waxings there, jerk.
I don't even remember this. I know I did a lot of team at work. I still want to do the book. We're going to do the book. Me and you. Zach. Me and you.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
People are like, what book are you talking about? Go look up the mythology. You'll see. You'll understand once you look up the mythology about the book and Tiamat. And I'll leave it at that. There you go. A gesture you can barely see because Zoom's screwing up today.
Yep.
And I apologize for some of the choppy audio, people, because I know I keep asking, do I have the mic? It's because I start talking, my box doesn't light up, and I don't know if you're actually hearing me.
Seems to be the day for that audio stuff today.
Zoom, choice of champions.
This is a throwdown episode, so fuck it, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that. But the middle of the invocation also progresses in stages. I was kind of describing the stages of, you know, where you start getting sick. There's other stages after that, where you start losing bodily control, and then basically you get fully possessed. And I believe this is a spectrum, and I also believe possessions, unless you're pretty well trained, are more rare than people would think. People fake possessions a little too much. There's certain, actually, some of the actual Catholic ways to see if you're possessed are actually really good. You know, can you have information that you should not have? Can you do something that you physically cannot do? These are all basically exorcist criteria, whether or not they'll perform an exorcism. Like, can you guess something you should never know? So, like, a priest will sometimes go and bring a bag with a number of pennies there's no way you could know how many pennies are in there, and if you're possessed or otherwise, like, there, you should be able to tell them, but that's a non-linear leads. Those are all good ways. Like, clearly, Zach's seen some pretty gnarly possession. The last time I was actually in Canada, in Canada, that was pretty bad, actually. I mean, pretty good. It was, I mean, but not bad.
Yeah. Literally, I mean, the gist of it is Andrea got possessed, and he was doing physical things. Like, I know martial arts, and I know the capability. The man was going to town on things that I'm like, that is not physically possible to go that low on your knees.
That was a good possession.
And right. With the sword, too. Like, low stance sword work. I'm like, damn.
Down on your knees, Andrea.
I wasn't on my knees. That's the thing.
He's just squatted down so low while moving.
Ah, super southern stance. I got you.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe it was some form of Haitian martial art that I don't actually know.
Yeah, who knows?
So he used a machete. Machetes don't have the same balance as a regular sword.
No, and he was moving fast, too. It was like a low squat, like, fast walk. I was like, damn.
Or every year when we drink Pinmen. You cannot physically drink 21 red pepper rum. Well, you might be able to, but I cannot physically drink red pepper rum. Hot pepper rum. I just can't. And then I cry for days afterwards because the aftertaste gets to me. And yep. I love spicy food.
No, I agree. I agree because we've all felt the aftermath of those possessions.
Yep.
So, like, that's the thing. Like, it's legitimate if someone's claiming to be possessed and they're telling you how they're upset because you're not agreeing with them personally. Test the possession. Spirits usually won't do that, you know. Spirits usually will have totally different concerns than anything that you are talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're angry with somebody, they probably won't be angry with them. That's not how it works, right? Because if you have shifted to that much of an alien vibration, like, they no longer can register the cursory issues.
Yeah, and I mean, information from that, there's no preconceived notion that the person should have. I mean, I've had that one do invocations, and people are like, how did you know? I'm like, I don't know. I just met you when I did this.
That's the thing. Those are all pretty good signs that there's an actual invocation that's going on, because the entity involved, it isn't, I don't want to quite say it's totally personality. I still believe that you have an interface to that, but they do have information that you would not normally have. Or the interface reveals information you shouldn't have and allows your psychic senses to kind of perceive information differently that might be around a person.
Yeah, and I think it's like, this is the testing thing. I don't think we hear a lot about that much, but I mean, if you actually go into like actual traditions, where they do this formally, they do test it out in various ways. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, in voodoo they test things out. I'm certainly aware if you're talking about a possession in Shinto.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are testing those possessions to make sure it's not just somebody faking it. Also to make sure it's the spirit that you expect. Unless there's rigorous controls on the ritual protocols, as in you're shielding and cleaning the space and doing all that stuff, not necessarily by an absolute book, although if you're in a living tradition, they will do it by the book mostly. But still, everything is going to be all cleaned up so no alien information sources can get in there or get in there at the wrong time. Or if it is, recognizing what the alien thing is or how to approach it. You know, different systems have different, I don't know, different okayness with different random spirits popping in.
Mm-hmm.
Like you non-ceremonial magic train voodoo essence, you usually get what you're going to get, but not always. Random spirits can pop in and say hi. Other things, Damn, Jason's getting possessed.
Yeah, about that. Go on.
Wait, did that actually happen?
I'll put you this way. As you were speaking, I was seeing strange scenes.
Or you're just going to sleep.
Yeah.
Strange scenes where geometries don't match, named Ryla.
Yeah, not quite that intricate, but go on.
There we go.
Yeah, and I mean, going back to what we were saying, it's like, I think different traditions are going to have different okayness with the, say, random spirits. I know, like, in Chinese traditions, generally speaking, it also depends which sect, they might have an audience pew area for random spirits where they're just like, you can chill there, and here's the show. But it's a little more formalized at that point.
Mm. In most of the big voodoo ceremonies I saw in Haiti the other day, would have time for other spirits to just take possession of people. But you never know what you're going to get there either. Like, so this is like, I kind of feel like it's good to have more control so you know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. That takes a little bit longer to develop those skills. I feel like, you know, usually I'm still got some remnants of my left-hand path ideology. Like, I don't really like it when things just show up. I'd like them to send an invitation to me or an announcement to me, and then psychically, and then we can kind of work out the details. It's kind of like if someone's going to come to your house, they should, you know, give you a telephone call first. They shouldn't just show up. Like, a random stranger shouldn't just show up at your house. It's usually not good when a random stranger shows up at your house. It's like a bill collector or a police officer or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I mean, we've talked about spectrum, we've talked about tools, we kind of talked about definitions of invocation, and then it just gets into, well, you could stack all this together, right? To progressively keep pushing it.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Like, I think people, they'll start doing a connection. Well, first, there's, in an invocation, especially with groups, there's two different things going on. If you're doing an invocation alone, it's easy. I think that's generally, I really truly believe once you go through the 30 days of work with a spirit, your neurons will adjust, your mental patterns will harden, and what would be considered non-linear results, or I don't know. You do paranormal investigation, Jason. What would you call it?
I don't know how to put it in terms of paranormal investigation, but the whole idea is there has to be like an actual mental perspective switch, right? What you're talking about is changing your way of thinking and embedding it into your head so that you're able to access that information more readily the next time, right?
Well, no, at 30 days, you actually have hardened neurons. So at that point, it's where you can actually, I think you can actually start getting weird physical effects.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you have enough experience, enough energy plasticity to kind of do this the first time. I mean, yes, you've got to see me do that. Like, well, this is the first time I'm summoning spirit. I get weird effects. But I've been doing this so many years, like my subconscious mind's probably Swiss cheese at this point. Like, you know, it's probably like a, you know, Mr. Plastic. It gets beat up so much that it's just like, okay, whatever. This is a new vibration. It's alien. Who cares? He does this all the time. But I mean, generally speaking, like to actually start getting actually meaningful results, like, yes, one invocation can change your perspective, but to get physical manifestations from that invocation and weird stuff, it's usually, I think it's 30 days because you got to get the neural pathway set up and then you don't have to work at it so much, which is actually one of the secrets I think that's hidden in such things as the Keys of Solomon, is that those initial rituals aren't supposed to be the way you do it each time. I think that's a misnomer that each time you're supposed to do a full, you know, 3-day summoning. I think actually, like, you do that full 3-day summoning, it's part of your energy, and you're supposed to, you know, if you read the packs, come when I call, that's an initiation into the spirit. So it's part of you. And you could just say, come when I call. So even though that's not quite invocation, and it's classically thought of as evocation, it's still inside of you at that point. It, literally in the language like that you use, it's literally like, come when I call does not imply that you need to go and do a full 3-hour ritual to get them to come. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like what I'm saying. Like, it's part of your energy system, and then you can dive in.
No, I get it. And an initiation with the spirit is an introduction. You have to learn how to interface with that energy to be able to have a relationship with it.
I think that those long rituals, even initiations, are building the interface of the spirit. So that actually gives you a kind of insight to, you know, why you say, why I don't get angry at the charlatans so much, you know, on certain other, you know, with voodoo and other aspects. It's because, like, what the initiation does, the only secret worth having is the experience, like nowadays. There's no other secret worth having in any way. Think about it. Anything you can think of as a secret is there on the internet. The experience of getting introduction and making sure your interface is right, that's priceless. Mm-hmm. Right? So if the initiations from most traditions are to make sure that the interface that you are making inside to that vibration is correct, and that the vibration you're connecting to is correct, so that way you can actually use it then in a meaningful way. I would say prove me wrong, but what do you guys think? You know, I don't have my sunglasses, so I can't do the meme.
There's no real meme prove me wrong. As I fully agree on this. I mean, if there's going to be a meme, is not for us, but do lift, bro. Do meditate, bros. Do dudettes. Anyways, going back to what we're discussing, yeah, I think that's very much in agreement with my experience of things, because I know even with our past due magic challenges, I did a lot of invocations, and those particular spirits still, like, those vibrations walk with me, because I could see how my life kind of contours certain ways around that when I do a big analysis.
You know what? I'm going to totally make that meme. Do you meditate, bro? Do you even meditate, bro? Hey, Jason, do you even meditate, bro?
Oh, man. But no, I mean, we've been talking for the most of an hour now. I mean, did you ever broach on the fact of your concept, Andrea, of mediumship being like mild possession?
I think that if you actually, we didn't talk about that, but I do believe that. Most really solid mediums, as you get further along, do not have memories of the experience. This goes right into the alien, what do you call it? Now, granted, as we know from spiritualism and our studies of spiritualism pretty extensively, they will take approach that I don't think any of us will really agree with. And we've kind of seen go sideways more than once, where they just let anything kind of come into the circle. They'll say they're not doing that, but they are. And that's okay. I think it's okay to actually do that kind of mediumship with the dead. I don't have an issue with that. I just have an issue with letting anything in. I don't think – I tend to be more careful. And I've kind of seen these things go badly. But then again, you know, when people are in a group of, like, as we know from a lot of spiritual churches, like, it's the same group of people always showing up, you know. So at that point, they have the same group of spirits generally hanging around them, and they have this kind of meta, you know, group agreement of what's okay and what's not. And that actually affects the invocation too. Like, it's an unspoken kind of psychological constraint on the invocations. But yeah. Mediumship with the dead or anything at that point can transition to a place where you no longer are in control. So it's like that's like the same spectrum, actually. You know, the technique is a little different. You know, it's not like Haitian voodoo where you're like dancing and you get possessed from exhaustion, you know. It's a meditative technique, but the spectrum is still there. And some people can flip that switch fast, too. When you actually force them to slow down or distract them, you know, you could see them go through the same stages where they're kind of, like, point. If you're really good at, like, perceiving energy, you could feel the energies coming around them, then coming in them, and it's a process, then spreading throughout their body, then they're sort of amplifying it through their whole body with a loop continuously, right? They do it. Some people can do that really fast. I can do that really fast from practice. I've seen some people who can actually do that fast with one or two spirits, but anyone can do that fast with practice. But then they basically keep going, and then all of a sudden it's there. And they're channeling the information. They might not remember the information. They might remember some of it. You know, kind of goes in and out of that deep state of the last stage of the possession, I think. I mean, you've seen that too, where kind of good mediums are riding that line where they can't remember what they're talking about because the information vibration is too alien from their normal conscious daily state.
I absolutely agree. The best mediums I've ever met actually start jotting down notes off to the side while they're speaking stuff because they know damn well they're not going to remember after the fact.
Yeah.
So the time when I do a reading, I don't actually know what I've said. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I have no idea. I have no idea what I said. And when I look back at the notes, I'm like, yeah, okay. Right. I can see like what was being talked about, but not necessarily like, with information you wouldn't have again, but yeah, it's exactly that. That looks to me like possession. They would never call it that, but it is because their mind has basically switched to a point where the context of the energy is so alien from their day-to-day life. That's why people can't remember things in possession or when they're doing mediumship. It's because the context of the vibration is so alien to the day-to-day life. They don't have any hooks into understanding it. It kind of reframes, it's like a different mental storm. Unless you're in the mental storm, like the set of neural pathways firing at the same time, how are you going to access that in your day-to-day waking state? It's not possible. It's like accessing a dream. You can do that, but it takes practice, right? But you're accessing a dream in real time. It's about the same. Or like, you know, someone drops mescaline. They remember details, but that's not the same as the inexperienced thing. It's like a dream because they don't have the day-to-day life is so separate, it doesn't have the right inroads. Like, as you let things get weirder in your life, if you're a magician, it actually gets easier to remember in possession what went on because you're okay with the weirdness, as it were, like consciously speaking. You're like, this is normal. It's weird. I'm just going to let the spirit vibration in my head. But that takes a lot of practice when people are used many, many years. But usually, you know, it's because it's such an alien vibration from their day-to-day life that they can't access once the information state from their conscious state. It's like, it's too different, right? Even though they're partially building that state inside, in energetically and mentally and subconsciously, they're building the interface and they're changing their energy, but it just doesn't, it's too far from the waking state. Like, it's too far from what we are every day to deal with some thing that doesn't have a physical body. It doesn't have understanding of time. It doesn't need time. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to eat, right? It doesn't have any of the actual baseline concerns. It really is like a sort of alien, it's not really alien, but it's really like white and black. It's like if like you had more oddities in your life or weirdness, then maybe people could remember. And I think mediums, as they go further along later, even once they get past that stage, they can start remembering more, even if they're good enough to get to that stage. But it's like, to me, possessions are often like, either if I can remember it, it's like a dream. If anyone says anything to me to remind me what happened, I can access it and then remember everything. But it's like a dream.
Yep.
It's like going down the rabbit hole. Yes, there you go. That was just bad. But it's still like a dream. It's like, can I access, have I studied how to access a dream? Yeah. But it takes practice, and I have to, like, give myself clues, which is exactly what's happening with the possession. Like, I have to give myself clues. Somebody has to give me clues to what happened. Sometimes I'm pretty embarrassed about what happened, where I'm like, did that actually happen? And they'll be like, yeah. I'm like, oh.
We've all been there.
Pick an incident. That one is probably the worst for me.
Yeah, and it's like the clues.
Two chicken incidents. The first chicken incident was when I released the chicken in Parma. That was bad. Under possession. And I'm like, I did what? Did you guys go get the chicken? No, we left it out there. The second one was the demon chicken incident in Michigan.
Oh, demon chicken!
Demon chicken incident was probably the scariest thing ever I saw in my life. So no, it wasn't. But it was in the top 100, definitely.
Let's put Lilith in the chicken, break its neck, so its neck's handing over like this, and it's just running all over the goddamn place like, ah, I'm gonna get you.
You're not supposed to. Okay, well.
Yeah.
So we're interviewing people to be our manga, book, anime artist to tell some of these stories. Anyone want to? No, I'm just kidding.
Wants to? Hit us up.
Stories need to be told. So it's 8:59, and that's the time to talk about our sponsor, Zach.
So our sponsor is Wuji Shren Life Wellness and Spiritual Performance Center. It's located in Toronto, Ontario. 607 Girard Street East, East Chinatown, live in the stereotype. That said, we offer various spiritual services to support and build up your magical practice. So that can be anywhere from acupuncture, qigong, meditation. We have ceremonies, divinations. It's a full-stop shop for everything you want. So if you'd like more information, go to www.wujixuan.ca.
All right, now with that, if you are interested or watching on Facebook, which there's a whole bunch of comments on Facebook, if you would like to do some real invocations with us, and we're going to do a clinic, workshop, whatever you want to call it, on the second hour, deeper down the rabbit hole, come on to the Zoom, which Zach will post on the group, and first become a sponsor, and then we'll do actual invocations through a whole bunch of means with some non-ritualistic but shamanic and NLP tools to actually keep you safe. Key, keeping you safe. So we'll do actual invocations, but if you're not a sponsor already, but you'd like to be a sponsor and do actual invocations, there's the link. Zach, go ahead and put that on Facebook because we've got a lot of people watching on Facebook.
Yep, done.
And post the Zoom there too. So if you are not a sponsor, which there's no one here that is not a sponsor, so it doesn't matter. But if you're not a sponsor, sign up and then we will do the workshop part of the show where we're going to do actual invocations. I'm going to stop to Facebook. This is Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Stay safe in our current pandemic reality. Stay safe and well.